Okay, I have a question to start with then. We talk about seeing a visible object, and we talk about nimitta. Is the present moment visible object, or is it nimitta of visible object?
Can you see the arising and falling away of visible object right now?
The arising and falling away, no.
So it's nimitta. The succession of the arising and falling away of anything which arises.
So unless one is able to see arising and falling away, then if there is awareness, it would be awareness of the nimitta rather than the actual dhamma.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing the arising and falling away, that is actually one of the stages, isn't it, of jhanas?
Uh-huh. Higher vipassana jhana too.
Yeah. And nimitta is...
Nimitta is the image,
trace.
Or trace.
Trace
would
yes.
be another word.
We were talking yesterday or the day before about seeing invisible object and metta. You were saying that when there's no understanding of seeing an invisible object, we have an idea we see a person, so we get angry with this person or that person, for example. But when there's understanding of visible object, what is there to be angry with? Are we angry with seeing? Are we angry with visible object? So from this you were saying that for the development of metta, there has to be right understanding of realities in order for metta to develop. And also before you've said that if one doesn't develop satipatthana, it's always an idea of this person or that person. So metta is very limited just to this person or that person. But my question is that the development of metta is not just limited to the Buddha and the Buddha's disciples. Even before the Buddha, even before people understood about Paramattha Dharmas, there was the development of metta. Would you say a little more?
So what's the question?
So the question is, if the development of metta depends on the development of satipatthana, depends on an understanding of seeing invisible objects, so that metta isn't limited to this particular person or that particular person, then what about for those who have never heard about satipatthana, who've never heard about realities, but who even before the Buddha's time develop metta even to the degree of jhana?
What about knowing that there is no being? Can metta broader and better than just with outright understanding?
I would think so, and mm-hmm. it seems obvious that if there is more understanding of seeing an invisible object, if there's more understanding, it's not a being, not a person, that metta develops. But I'm just wondering how in this case it was possible for those who had never heard the Buddha's teachings to develop metta.
Yes, they can have jhana with metta, but when they know more about realities, then their metta grow much more.
So even though their metta was to the degree of jhana, you're saying that it's still very limited.
Like metta of those who are not sotapanna, and the person who has experience realities as they are, still know who's who. What's what? But since the panya is greater, so metta can grow much more better.
So would you say in this sense that someone who has developed satipatthana, even though they haven't attained jhanas, haven't developed metta to this degree, but still the metta is much greater?
The person who develops satipatthana knows about one's own accumulation, whether there is more or less metta. At what time?
But what about the person who has developed samatha but not satipatthana? Do they not know?
Do they still have the idea of self?
Yes.
So they must be clinging to I and the other. They don't know that we are all the same. Realities are realities.
So even though it seems like such great metta to this degree of jhana, it's still very limited because of the idea of a person.
Because you see that since that person is not a sotapanna yet, so much to learn and to become detached, even the dosa.
I suppose if we take that and consider Karuna also. The same would apply in the sense that we know for the Buddha that it was out of compassion for beings, and because the understanding of suffering is quite different in one who has developed satipatthana. So there's a different aspect to Karuna.
You have metta only to those who have bodily sufferings, or also to those who have kilesa?
Karuna, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You have karuna on account of the kilesa well as the bodily suffering. Yes. And how about upekkha?
The same.
But the traditional basis for upekkha is understanding of the effects of karma and vipaka, that beings are heirs to their karma. So that is not exclusive.
We use the term Brahma Vihara, and Brahma is those who have panya too.
But I'm just trying to understand how, with the development of understanding of satipatthana, it would give a different understanding of or development of upekkha compared to the person.
I think the object are the same. No matter it's metta, object for metta or karuna, upekkha or mudita. When it's panya, how can it make difference between these four?
When it's panya, how can it make a difference?
Between metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha, whether it's less or more. It depends on panya.
Thinking about karuna and thinking about the Buddha's teaching in terms of embodying compassion, how can we think about the teaching, like all the teachings, as embodying that compassion?
I think that we have to name or call compassion at all. But when the citta arises, it means that by sankhara, which has accumulated. So no need to think whether we have metta or upekkha now. It depends on conditions, the conditioned accumulation.
I was thinking, though, sometimes we become worried about, say, the length of time. We often talk about how slowly panya develops, and it can sometimes seem like quite daunting to think like that. And then I remind myself about the teaching essentially being compassionate teachings. So there must be something that balances that out, that
the understanding is the which balance,
that it's only the moment and not a very, very long time. Yes. So it is useful to always be looking for the compassionate aspect of the teaching. Would you say that was helpful?
I think that all the teachings are so very helpful. That's all. And it depends on that very moment, whether it will condition what kind of reality. Otherwise, it's like selection, thinking and waiting and expecting.
Which conditions are necessary for metta to arise?
Understanding, may I say?
Understanding of what?
Reality, the truth of this moment, to know what is what.
So, for instance, if I know that I'm seeing, that would be a condition for metta to arise.
So we have metta all the time because they're seeing all the time. It depends. Usually what arises after seeing, that should be known as anattaness. No one can control, no one can condition such moment, but understanding can understand what comes after seeing, which is uncontrollable, which is already conditioned to arise.
If it's uncontrollable, how can metta increase then?
Again, more and more understanding. Okay. All kusala, not just metta, all kinds of kusala will grow.
But if it's uncontrollable, how can any kusala grow?
And what about akusala? If you think about just kusala, all kinds of realities. Otherwise, we cannot understand life as anatta. no one, no self. When we learn to understand different characteristics of each reality, each one cannot be taken for self. For example, if we talk about different mental factors, without understanding, even right now, all mental factors arise and fall away in split seconds so fast, they all perform their function uncontrollable. But who knows? They are there, not self at all.
Is yonisomana sikara necessary for the arising of metta?
Yes, but yonisomana sikara is a cetasika. Can we take the cetasika for I or mind? Even seeing right now, manasikara arises with seeing itself. Without understanding, seeing as that which is not manasikara, different. The direct and very keen understanding can condition detachment from taking any of reality of which awareness is aware. Because without awareness, we can just talk about different characteristics, but not the direct experience of anyone yet. So we cannot just have such keen understanding that it's not self. For example, hardness now is appearing. When it's keen panya, no one there at all. It's just the moment of experiencing hardness. Nothing else, the whole world's gone. Never appear together. So right understanding can understand the hardness perfectly, that no one in it. Otherwise, it's my finger, my head, my toe, my ear, when it's just hardness.
So probably what's important is to have a theoretical understanding as a basis.
Right.
Because panya grows, and it has no growth from somewhere, not just happen to arise without hearing, without considering at all. And the panya knows that panya is not just theoretical knowledge, because even one talks about seeing, and now there is seeing. The difference between intellectual understanding and the direct understanding is much different.
The theoretical basis helps us identify correctly the present moment.
Helps panya to grow keener and keener. Okay. Because it's so difficult to have detachment from whatever appears, because there's always avijja, ignorance, no understanding. So there is always attachment, unknowingly, so fast, so rapidly. Who knows that before knowing what the object is, there is already attachment to visible object?
Before knowing the object, there's already attachment to that object?
Mm-hmm. Visible object. Not knowing that, whether it's things or people or being or friends or who, before knowing that, there is attachment to just visible object so rapidly.
Because it's already fallen away. I mean, later there's thinking about it, but there's already been attachment even before the thinking about the object. Is that right?
Yeah.
So we talk about effort to know the reality that is arising.
Is there now effort? Is there now here effort? No one can do anything. It depends on effort arises with what type of citta. By conditions.
The effort can arise with kusala.
Right. Even sitting and there is attachment, there is effort already. Even it's not lopa, it's only moha mula citta, there's effort already. To be ignorance.
Kunchichin, it seems that it's possible to make the mistake of connecting the theoretical understanding with the immediate experience of panya or sati or whatever might be desirable. But there's no connection in the sense of one could spend a lifetime getting a theoretical understanding and it wouldn't be until another lifetime that conditioned sati or panya. There was not someone that controls that connection between theoretical understanding and the arising of these factors.
You think in terms of this life and next life?
Well, not. I'm thinking not in terms of doing something and then immediately getting a result.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that the result might be, in very different circumstances,
mm-hmm.
unexpected circumstances.
Right. Is the now, is this moment not the result of previous karma?
Yes.
See, even seeing, hearing, is the condition, is the result of previous karma. We don't know when the karma has been done, but the result is this moment. So we cannot tell how far it will bring result.
But I think the connection is somewhat more direct than that, because if we hear, for example, that there's effort now arising with kusala or akusala, then there mightn't be any perceptible result. But if we hadn't heard that before, and we've heard it and we consider it, then it must make a difference to our perception of the world, even if it's not an appreciable difference.
But who knows?
So what is right effort?
Right effort is right effort, not I.
Mm.
No, not anyone at all, because the effort is effort. You cannot make effort different at all. Effort must be effort. Effort cannot be pasa. Effort cannot be vetana. And whereas just a moment ago, effort. See, as it's completely gone, never come back. So effort right now is just like that. Everything is like that.
Now there's effort.
Yes, never come back. Just arise and falls away in split seconds.
Or effort.
I think that we mix mental factors like intention and effort. So effort seems apparent, but actually effort's not apparent at all. We just call a thing that is there, but can we really know?
That so what we think of as effort is just many different chitta seekers over a long period of time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And can chetana be effort?
But what we think of as effort includes chetana
right.
and other factors.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But if we learn to know how many chittas arise with effort, then we know that it's so impossible to just know one by one without the developed panya. And unexpected too. Unexpectedly. No one can have will or intention to know this or that. Impossible. That is the idea of self, not the right reality at all. For example now, the seeing consciousness arises with 7 jetasikas. Who will know which jetasika? See? Not by will, not by intention. What about the indifferent feeling which accompanies seeing right now? Different from seeing itself. That can be directly known when it's developed, when panya develops. Little by little.
Indifferent feeling can be directly known.
It's real. So it depends on panya, and it depends on condition, and it depends on awareness which arises to be aware of what object. By itself, because as it has arisen, it has to be aware of an object only.
So then, which conditions are necessary for the development of panya?
to read or to listen carefully. Mm-hmm. Because Dhamma is so subtle, so deep. If we are not careful, we take what is said in the sutta as I, like effort, try to have it or should have it. But actually, effort is effort. So we don't miss any word in the teachings or think that it's very simple. We have to consider carefully, especially to understand Dhamma, as Anatta and Abhidhamma too, Paramatta Dhamma, the absolute reality.
What was the last part you said about considering Dhamma as Abhidhamma, you said?
Yes, because people might think that Dhamma is not Abhidhamma. But actually, Dhamma must be Paramatta Dhamma, absolute. And Abhidhamma is the details, the subtlety of how Buddha taught us to really see the anatta-ness of all Dhammas in details. For example, if we appreciate just the term Dhamma, is that enough? What is Dhamma? Is there Dhamma now? What kind of Dhamma? See? Even manasikara, that people like to use the term yoniso manasikara and ayoniso manasikara. For them, are they really Dhamma? Or are they manasikara, not Dhamma, which perform the function of manasikara? See? Manasikara cannot be anyone. But when one is trying to have manasikara, one takes manasikara for I have it. It's mine. Actually, it's gone. Completely. Absolutely.
What's left is the side.
Also arises and falls away. Nothing is left.
No, I mean when manasikara is taken as I and falls away, then desire, mm-hmm. I mean, was apparent.
Yeah. And desire, the nature of desire is for clinging more or to become detached from clinging. Whenever it arises, see, only panya can become detached by understanding the nature of desire as just a reality, not me, not anyone. And all the teachings will bring to completely and perfectly detachment. Would you like to become detached from all these realities? Actually, it's not you or anyone. It's the Hiri Jetasika. Hiri Jetasika.
Hiri as in Hiri
Does Hiri have the function of wanting to be detached?
Hiri is that which is shame of not understanding, not knowing about reality. It's not you who just want to have detachment, but it is Hiri and other jetasikas. So there is more listening, more considering.
Maybe the same thing, but I thought it was understanding the benefits.
Yes,
if you like,
there's also shame with understanding. Hiri arises with all sopana citta.
So Hiri is also related to knowing the danger of desire.
No, that is the function of panya. That's why there are many jetasikas, not one, not just panya. At moment of being shame or have shame, is that panya yet? Not necessary.
But to be shameful of not having understanding, there must be some understanding.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So some understanding means some panya must be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why when there is seed, then the tree can grow, the seed will grow. Without the seed, how can there be a tree or a bush? So even just a moment of even intellectual understanding, that will grow. But one has to know that panya is panya, and there are many degrees of panya.
So you're saying if there was no panya, it could never develop. But because there must be some level of developed panya mm-hmm. already, then it can arise mm-hmm. and be developed further.
So it has to be connected with the conceptual panya.
No, it's conceptual.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
At the moment of panya, there is no name for panya. You don't have to call
panya or vichar or yes. with different words. But you see that it begins with even straightening one's view. Like mother and fathers are the benefactor or those who do good deeds to us, we can understand. Even in the worldly kusala, it will bring more and more considering, investigating correctly, rightly, until it becomes panya. For example, even the term Buddha, just one word, it can trigger the interest, more or less, depending on accumulation. Even there is no understanding of Dhamma at all yet in the very beginning. But since we know what does it mean, that this term, not just for everyone, but only for that which has become enlightened by himself.
Just to return to the compassion that underlies the teachings, whenever we feel puzzled or concerned about not being able to understand and it just seems that it's all at the level of intellect, at that moment, are we missing the compassionate angle of the teaching? Because it seems that the Buddha does not want us to be puzzled and to be anxious and all of that. So we're doing something. We're getting something wrong.
I think that we cannot control or have anything arise at will, especially panya. Mm-hmm. But by hearing more and considering more, there can be the development of panya very, very gradually, unexpectedly. It's like now, we have heard the term sankhara khanda. Because there are five khandas, the rupa khanda is rupa, corporeality, materiality. And the other four are nama, vedana, feeling at this moment, it's not self, and various of vedana from time to time, from life to life, each one has risen and fallen away, never come back. This is khanda. So by understanding this, one sees that just feeling is for a moment only, no matter it's pleasant or unpleasant. And the sanya now, no one thinks about it at moment of knowing what is what. That is sanya cetasika, arising with each moment. So many things that are unknown, all cetasikas. And the sankhara khanda, the other 50 cetasikas, are now working, performing the function to condition next moment with understanding, even gradually, see. Not self, not I. So at this moment, no one is working, no one is doing anything, only all dhammas, cetasika and citta. And tomorrow there can be more understanding by sankhara khanda of this moment, from moment to moment.
Then I think speaking the truth is the best expression of compassion.
Okay. Yes, yes. Yes.
It sounds easy when you say there's just dharmas arising and passing away. and they're not interested, or they're just performing a function.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of makes the Dharma sound like there's no one there, so it sounds much easier than when there's someone there to have to do something.
Mm-hmm. So when we consider what everyone heard, like khanda, sankhara khanda, vetana khanda, sanya khanda, not just for us to forget, but to remember that it's not self at all.
The Buddha said that the khandhas are dukkha.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And through being aware of ultimate realities,
mm-hmm.
how can we become aware of dukkha, which is like the basic.
So what is meant by dukkha here?
Dukkha is a very broad term, right?
But when we talk that khanda is dukkha, each one is dukkha, what does it mean?
It means that it changes.
Arising and falling away and never come back.
And can't stop it.
Right.
Arising.
Mm-hmm. It seems like everything in this room is so solid. Stay. See? Actually, it's not like that at all. So by understanding the teachings and know when sati arises and when it does not arise, one understands that without sati arising, it's just thinking or considering on its only intellectual understanding. But whenever there is moment of sati, one can understand what is meant by the path leading to the experiencing or penetrating reality. Because now reality is now appearing to different doorways, like seeing cannot appear to body sense, and hearing cannot appear to eye base at all. By understanding this, it brings a moment of being aware with unknowingly, but whenever there is panya, which begins to understand seeing, there must be awareness. So it does mean that one should intend to have awareness, to bring about awareness. But even at this moment, when there is visible object, and there is seeing, there is hearing, and sound, it depends on there is a little understanding of that by conditions, without intention to be aware. But by study, one knows that at that moment of being to understand, there must be awareness, which is different from awareness of other degrees, like awareness of at moment of dana or sila, or understanding intellectually. So it's so natural.
And wanting to be aware, if we analyze that in that mental state, the mental state of wanting to be aware, wanting to develop wisdom, how would we analyze it in terms of ultimate truth? Is it lopa?
You call it
lopa. You name it lopa, or that reality which clings, attached to know. To have knowledge or understanding. When satipatthana doesn't have conditions to arise yet, it's impossible to understand the moment of being satipatthana. It's different degree and different level of attachment which deceive as being attached. Sati. But it's not the actual satipatthana at all.
So the desire to come to this talk, is that lopa?
Who knows? Nobody can tell at all. It depends on the truthfulness, sincerity, why one come to listen, to talk about, to discuss on whatever appears now. The shame shameful of not knowing is there, but unknowingly, because it's always I who want to, but actually the citta arises and falls away so fast alternately, kusala and akusala. Without the right awareness, it's impossible to tell what moment is kusala and what moment is akusala. But so, we know theoretically.
So probably I could say that the desire to come here or the intention to come here is a mixture of kusala and akusala.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even at moment of listening or talking, is there no akusala at all?
That's why we can never just tell from the situation. We can't say, oh, it's a Dharma talk, so it must be kusala, or one's shopping, it must be akusala, because different jitas change all the time.
Is it important to know the difference between the moments that are kusala and the moments that are akusala?
Then what else should we know?
Just know nama and rupa. Just by know nama and rupa without knowing, without worrying whether it's kusala or akusala.
And without being nama, can there be kusala and akusala? No nama, just kusala and akusala is impossible. Nama itself is kusala or akusala, not kusala and akusala without nama.
Thank you for my answer.
Kusala and akusala is nama, is not rupa.
Can rupa be kusala?
No.
Can it be akusala?
Rupa is a result of karma, isn't it?
It depends, because some group are conditioned by karma. Some group are conditioned by citta, and some groups are conditioned by ahara, and some groups are conditioned by uttu, temperature. So we cannot just say that rupa arises from kamma only.
For what reason it's not rupa, it's not kusala nor akusala?
Can it experience anything? Can it see? Can it like? Can it dislike? Can it be hungry? Can it feel pain?
Hunger is kusala or akusala.
Feeling. Pleasant or unpleasant? It's a kind of feeling, for sure. Pleasant or unpleasant? Hungry. When one is hungry.
Pleasant or unpleasant, it's not.
Hunger. We will know later whether it's kusala on akusala just by being told that it is, but why? For example, if we say it's not akusala, why? And if we say that it's kusala, or what, why? The question is why. For example, at moment of being hungry, what is the feeling?
It's unpleasant feeling.
Pleasant?
Unpleasant.
Oh, unpleasant.
Unpleasant
feeling.
But unpleasant feeling is a result of karma. It's neutral. It's neither kusala nor akusala.
Really, unpleasant feeling.
Well, it's a result of kusala karma.
What about dosa? Dosa is not the result of karma at all.
No, but unpleasant feeling is not dosa.
Whenever dosa arises, the feeling must be unpleasant.
That's right, but whenever there is an unpleasant feeling, not necessarily there should be dosa.
Right. Oh, no.
You may be talking about unpleasant bodily feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah. Unpleasant bodily feeling.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Oh,
so now rupa cannot be nama, for sure. It cannot feel, it cannot see, it does not experience anything. So whatever reality which cannot experience at all, whenever it arises, has to be rupa, no matter it's visible or invisible, like sound.
So another important condition for the arising of Panya is to have a Kalayanimitta.
And yoniso manasikara condition what is heard, whether it's right or wrong. Not just believe. There must be considering, investigating.
Not just blind belief. Mm-hmm. Right? In regards to the teacher? Mm-hmm.
To reality. If I would say that visible object is nama, right or wrong, see?
It's right or wrong. Visible object is
nama.
It's wrong.
Uh-huh. See, by investigating, mm-hmm. by your own considering, by considering itself, it will know what's right and what's wrong.
It seems that in terms of nama and rupa, in relation to the mind and body, that how can it's sometimes hard to understand where nama ends and rupa begins, because, for example, thinking
the first moment of this life. Okay, and then further than that?
Oh yes, please, further than that.
Longer than that, long time ago. Long, long time ago. But it doesn't appear now. So at this moment, Panya can understand how it comes to experience object through different doorways. There must be reality and conditions.
When there is thinking, there seems that it can condition almost immediate physical result.
How?
Well, there's, I suppose, a scientific explanation, but I want to know what the dharmic explanation is.
So if you're thinking of someone who did something wrong to you and you feel angry, and you feel the body feel changes,
yes, that's a good example.
That's cheetah.
Conditioning the rupa. Mm-hmm.
And I suppose what I'm interested in is where the separation between the rupa and the nama and the rupa occurs when we look at an example like that. That thinking about someone and getting angry, and there are feelings associated with the anger. No, physical feelings, not jetasis,
yeah.
But physical feelings.
Feeling at that moment belong to someone, or is your own feeling?
Oh, quite clearly one's own. Mm-hmm. Quite clearly,
yeah.
Experienced at a bodily level. Like maybe something, in the stomach or...
When you think of the other's sort of pain, do you also feel pain?
Sometimes.
In the hospital, you feel lots of pain then.
That's why the connection between thinking about that person in pain and then experiencing a physical sensation. Where does the nama and the rupa, where is the separation between?
Ignorance.
See
what? Ignorance.
When you said that the Buddha didn't have such feeling, you mean the Buddha didn't have this
pain.
Ignorance or the pain? For example, if he thought of someone else's discomfort, he didn't have physical pain, and weren't rupas conditioned by the citta, because no akusala cittas, but still when, for example, was great wholesome, not wholesome, but kiriya cittas, would be rupas conditioned by those, like we were saying the other day about rupas conditioned by piti, skillful piti, so still rupas conditioned by the cheetahs, but of course not the pain.
Let's talk about when we read newspaper or when we watch TV, many story. And sometimes you feel sad and sometimes you feel very good by watching it. It's exactly the same, mm-hmm. thinking all the time,
mm-hmm.
and condition different feelings.
Different rupas conditioned by cheetahs.
Do you cry when you see sad movie? Usually.
Nothing to do with your life. Only watching, looking, and can condition crying. Like your own. But actually it's your own. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We think we're crying about the other's discomfort or something, but actually it's just one's own unpleasant feeling one's crying about, isn't it? Or one has discomfort about.
So when somebody else feels sad, and that conditions for myself to feel sad also, and the Buddha doesn't have this kind of condition.
No akusa citta at all for Buddha. And he didn't want anyone to have akusala too.
So what is the factor that makes me feel sad when I see somebody else?
Thinking.
Thinking
of dosing.
I would guess the Buddha's compassion would usually be doesn't feel have pleasant feeling.
It can be. Depending on conditions. Like Mokalana saw Beta, see? He smiled.
You know, the story of the painter.
He smiled because he thought he was lucky not to be a painter.
not quite so true. That sounds a little bit accusing, doesn't it? It can't be like that.
He would never be Beta anymore. My conditions.
You don't like it, you don't like what you see.
That's very interesting because it makes me think about like the Christian background related to like for instance when somebody dies, when you go to a burial.
Yeah.
So you're supposed to feel sad also. Mm-hmm. Is that happens also in Taiwan?
They chat a lot.
They eat a lot.
As we've just come back to talking about funerals, and yesterday or the day before we were talking about death, and you made a comment about when the Buddha reminded Ananda many times to reflect on death, that actually it was a reminder to understand reality for sankhara khandhas, which are conditioned. Would you say a little more?
Oh, he just asked how many times Ananda reflect on this.
Yes.
It does mean that he has to think.
He was just asking how many times. And you said because right then there would be understanding of realities.
Who knows next moment, can it be death?
Sure.
And this is the answer.
So it's like saying, is there understanding of realities now?
One of the conditions that we mentioned a short time ago for the arising of Panya was having a Kalyana Mitta. I wonder if you could say something more about what this means in practical terms. Does it mean we have to find a teacher?
Buddha was our best Kalyana Mitta.
He's not here.
Yes, but his teachings like himself.
So the Dhamma is our Kalyana Mitta.
Mm-hmm.
So is there any role for an individual as a Kalyana Mitta?
Do you have good friend?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I have many good friends, not just one.
Why do you call them good friend?
Because they help my understanding of Dhamma.
Mm-hmm. I see.
But I think before you've also said that the real meaning of associating with Kalyana Mitta means associating with the wise, so associating with wisdom.
Right understanding.
Associating with right understanding, so that's why one can be in the presence of someone who is very wise, one can be in the presence of the Buddha, but it all comes back to the Yonaso Manasakara, to the wise reflection. It is the associating with the right understanding that is being taught, that is meant, rather than the physical situation.
Besides, the text is there for everyone. It's only when there's right understanding does it become a Kalyani Mitta.
Tanya, I would like to study more about Dhamma and learn more. What do you recommend?
Recommend. Yeah. Please.
More of this. I think more of what we're doing now.
For is this Dhamma?
Is it not?
Yeah, more about Dhamma, more about developing right understanding, also theoretical knowledge, more study about Abhidhamma. I don't know if there's any available teachers.
Well, I think now we are associating with Kalyanamittas because we're all discussing about Dhamma. As I understand it, it's not a question of finding a person to be a Kalyanamitta. Each one of us helps the other in that respect because we're all being a condition for the other to hear about and reflect on what is the truth taught by the Buddha. And this is a level of intellectual understanding and helping to clarify one's thinking about it. And that's a condition for more direct understanding.
They're going to India tomorrow, most of them.
Your first question was about when there's some intellectual understanding, like what then? Is it a matter of effort, or is it a matter of this, or is it a matter of that? And the answer was, dhammas are a matter, there's effort all the time. But by considering it's a condition for more understanding to develop. So the answer always comes back to the dhammas, the namas and the rupas, the conditioned dhammas.
Not just any dhammas, right? Specific dhammas.
Specific dhammas, but there's still no self that can make certain specific dhammas arise. Mm. So it always comes back to understanding the dhammas that are appearing, not the ones we would like to have appearing.
But a kusala can be a condition for kusala to arise. So
there's yoni somanasikara. If there is yoni somanasikara.
With lopa, you can come here with wrong understanding, even itself. But that can be because of past conditioning, of having come in contact with Dhamma, that can be a condition for right understanding. Because if lopa had taken you elsewhere, you wouldn't have heard it. So that lopa, that very lopa that brought you here, was a condition for you to hear it. Because we all come with ignorance.
But it was not only lopa. There was lower rising of Manishima, but there was also all the
appreciation of the value of
hearing. Right. I think that's something very important that I understood today. Because I always wondered about desire and the desire to know or to understand them. I always wonder, well, if it's desire.
But that is chanda, not lopa. Chanda is another jetasika, which arises with kusala or akusala. But lopa has to arise only with akusala citta.
How to know the difference between chanda then and lopa?
By awareness only.
Sorry,
by awareness only. Yeah. But I think that not at the beginning at all.
I just ask a question around a little sutta, and I can't actually, it might have been from the Visuddhi Magga, but it was about a frog. Mm-hmm. And the frog was present when the Buddha was teaching. And what's interesting is that it describes the frog hearing a sign in the Buddha's voice. And the next moment, someone else who was there listening to the Buddha's teachings, leant on the frog with his stick and the frog died immediately, but he was reborn and able to come and hear, bring all his followers and bring he was reborn as a prince, and he brought all his courtiers to hear the Buddha. And the Buddha asked him, "Why have you come?" And he said, "I heard a sign in your voice." And that I was curious about that word sign. It wasn't, it didn't describe it as understanding or what would you understand that sign to be when he heard the sign?
Yeah. By saying that it's not different from this moment at all. After hearing, it depends on the individual's accumulation to be kusala or akusala.
Presumably the frog didn't understand the meaning of the words the Buddha spoke, but he got something from the Buddha's
There must words. Be the karma which will produce the rebirth consciousness. Mm. And no one knows which karma will condition such citta after hearing or listening to the sound. Like now, we don't know. If this moment is jutti, the last moment of this life, the citta before jutti, before the death consciousness, conditioned the rebirth of next life instantly by karma. Who knows? Because the sound is the sound. For those who do not die yet, and for those who is going to die, depending on karma. Without karma, there cannot be anything which will condition the rebirth consciousness. Next moment is untold. No one can know what would happen next, depending on conditions. Even after hearing, there can be death consciousness. Before death consciousness, there must be kusala citta or akusala citta by one karma, which will condition the next life, rebirth consciousness. Just from human being, in a split second, being a fly or deva or hell.
Big difference.
Mm-hmm. No legs or 100 legs.
So what brought him back to listen to the Buddha?
He just happened to be listening. And obviously had kusala while he was listening. But he couldn't have understood the Buddha's words, could he? But it says in the Visuddhimagga, he saw a sign.
Heard a sign.
Isn't it also a little bit like when we were children, we may have heard something about the Buddha's teaching that might not have made any sense at all, but there may have been just some sign or mark that's a condition to listen later. So
that's right.
What I heard as a child or something example. Like that.
But don't we all have that? That's why we study Dhamma.
Mm-hmm.
We're older. We hear the words of the Buddha and it clicks with us.
But if you like the voice, is that with kusala?
And the term sign is the object of the last moments before death.
Yes.
Is that what it means in the Visuddhimagga when it says a sign?
Kamma nimitta, kamma aramana, kati nimitta.
And the kamma nimitta happens every time to everybody when it's going with death. Before that.
Either one.
Is there always kamma nimitta?
Or kamma aramana or kati nimitta. There are three kinds. And it's not different from this moment at all. When death comes, this is the sign. Object of rebirth consciousness of next life.
This is the sign? Really?
Now, yes. Anything through one of the six doors.
Oh, right.
Yes.
I had the idea the kamma nimitta was like, for instance, if you were going to reborn in heaven, you would see some mansions, heaven mansions, or something like that. Or if you would be reborn in the beta world, you would see ugly.
That's one of the types.
Kati nimitta.
Oh.
But different from this moment, because visible object can be one object of citta before death. Sound can be one, or
and
thinking can be two.
And conditioned by previous jhanaka
kamma. Uh-huh. We call it chanaka, but usually it's kamma which will produce the rebirth consciousness.
So in the case of the frog, for example, the kamma that conditioned that rebirth object and those last moments, it could have been kamma from previous life or anything, just conditioning
but
that
the Sutimaja specifies it was because he was listening to the Buddha.
The sign is, but the citta is conditioned by karma, which will condition next life.
Because just the sign
cannot make or cannot condition rebirth consciousness. But the sign is the object of citta before death.
Conditioned by karma.
But doesn't that passage in Visuddhimagga, as I understand it, state or infer that it was because the frog was listening to the discourse by the Buddha that that type of sign arose, that that was the reason he became a deva after he died?
There is sound, many sounds. It depends on which one is conditioned by karma, which will produce next rebirth consciousness after death.
But still, when it comes down to it, if the frog had died without listening to
them. Anyway.
There are many supporting conditions.
Of course,
why people try to encourage people on their deathbed to see the bhikkhus or listen to the dharmas. One doesn't know if it will make any difference, but it may or may not be any condition.
But he had many supporting conditions. Nevertheless, this was one of the supporting conditions to be born as a deva, right?
You mean the sign or the previous karma, which conditioned the citta to be kusala or akusala before death?
The story in the Visuddhimagga infers that because the Buddha was speaking and the frog was listening, that was the main reason.
Yeah, like any sound. Sound is sound.
But if he heard another teacher teaching...
Sound?
Yes.
Or thinking? The sound of music, the sound of...
If he'd listened to the sound of music, he might not be born as a deva, right?
We don't know. At that moment, the object is so pleasant, very pleasant, but it can condition kusala citta or lopa mula citta by karma, which will produce the rebirth consciousness after death.
Okay, well maybe I've misunderstood that story.
Anyway, it has to be conditioned by karma.
But that to condition it, then
other frogs might have got killed and not gone to day around. But oh, that's interesting. I can see it that way. Yeah. The way I took the story, which I may have taken it wrongly, is that even a frog, by listening to Dharma, even though he couldn't have understand very much, I would assume, he was still kusala involved.
And who was the frog in previous lives?
Right.
The sweet sound of the
Buddha's
frog.
Can condition lopa. Oh, kusala.
More on the subject of lopa and the Buddha. Ajahn, when the Buddha came down from Tavatimsa Deva realm after preaching the Abhidharma, he came down the jeweled staircase and they could see him throughout, far and wide. And everyone who saw him, it says in the commentary, basically had lopa. If they weren't arahant or anagami, everyone had lopa. It specifies lopa because of his beauty and because of the spectacular scene. That's kind of interesting.
Why not?
Yeah.
So this is again coming back to the discussion about the Kalyanamitta. So it's not just a matter of seeing the Buddha, it's a matter of the understanding.
Presumably later that lopa conditioned some sort of kusala for them to listen more or something.
Were you saying this is lopa that should be followed?
No,
we
I
had a discussion about that.
Follow it anyway. It's just going to arise by condition. There's no one deciding I will follow on the lopa.
You can't say that the lopa they had seeing the Buddha would necessarily be a condition for any right understanding.
No.
Because the condition for right understanding is the accumulation of understanding,
right,
and the wise considering, whether it's understanding of attachment or any other reality.
But seeing the Buddha can be a condition for right understanding. I mean, seeing the Buddha.
No matter what the visible object, no matter what the sounds, if there's no wise consideration, if there's no understanding, then it's useless.
So,
because when you see the Buddha, it's just a visible object.
But it's karma also to be able to see the Buddha.
Instead of the diamond staircase,
mm-hmm.
What about this? Lopa or panya? Lopa tamada is lopa or panya?
Those people were the same, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Depending on conditions.
Seeing a beautiful object like the flowers is a result of good karma also. Yeah.
Yes, but after seeing, what's next?
So it's the same with the Buddha.
Any moment.
I mean, what about for Devadatta, seeing the Buddha, not a condition for understanding?
No, it's not canon. Unless it has will, it's canon.
Like, but the same with seeing the flowers, it can be a condition for understanding. It depends. Oh, it all comes back to the wise reflection and the considering.
When we talk about the flowers and we talk about visible object, the flowers are not visible object, are they? It's everything that is
seen.
Is seen, yes. So as soon as we single out the flowers or people in the room, that is no longer visible object. We are talking about everything as concept.
That is thinking.
Yes. So the moment of seeing is the totality of what impacts on eye sense.
Mm-hmm.
No one, no thing, no flowers.
But colour is specific colours, that's what I'm saying. It's just
that
it's
the object
that there is
to
yellows
use the word
and greens
of colour
and blues.
In discussing this?
Any word.
Yeah.
We do, if there is the understanding that which is seen, you don't have to call it anything at all. And you cannot change the appearing of
the... Those who saw the Buddha, they just saw a visible object.
There must
be. And the next moment, they recognize it as the Buddha or Jonathan.
Too late to think about who's that thing or what's that thing, because it's already seen and passed away.
And Sukhin, some people, the Buddha, like Vitali, the Buddha recommended to go away because of so much attachment when he's in the prison.
Seeing Buddha means I'm thinking about Buddha. Because that's a Buddha, right? It can be a reminder for so many good qualities. That's what I'm saying.
John, it seems to me you've said, though, that everything can be a reminder if we recognize the difference between nama and rupa. And we don't have to search for any certain objects through any certain doorway. So just pay attention to whatever is arising.
What is searching? Searching for a specific object or for...
Is usually based on ignorance, I think.
Citta arises and falls away so rapidly, no one can imagine how fast it is. So at moment of seeing, what is seen, it's that just very fast. So it's not at moment of knowing what is there. And usually one is forgetful to know that here is Dhamma, everything is Dhamma, visible object is Dhamma. Because we pay attention to shape, figure, and form and take it for something very so permanent, never has time to understand visible object as a reality at all. the same to other doorway too. But in order to understand the true nature of reality, which can be seen because it's so real, it's an animal, it's an element, no one can condition it to arise. No one can stop it from passing away. But no one understanding it as it is. That's why Buddha always point out each doorway on and on, about six doorways, and reality which can appear through each doorway must be different one and very short. That's why when there is no understanding of visible object as visible object, we talk more and more about that which is seen now as no thing, no one at all. An element which can contact the eye base and condition seeing to arise. If seeing didn't arise, visible object couldn't have been appearing now at all, at all. Even it's real, it can be seen, but when the seeing does not arise, it cannot appear.
So it's searching just a label for many moments of reality.
To developing understanding.
That's a better way to put it, I think, than I've been searching. When I was using the word, I meant it.
Are we now developing understanding?
No.
When there is understanding, it develops, not I develop it. Yeah.
The conditions it develops.
Mm-hmm. By itself.
It's fascinating. Understanding doesn't want to understand either. Understanding is just performing its function of understanding, right? It's not a thing that wants to do anything. It just does what it does.
And
even understanding.
What about the Four Noble Truths? The second one is attachment. That should be eradicated, see? Mm. And one forget about that at all. It's always after experiencing object through any doorway at any time. It's there. More and more. As now visible object is appearing, avijja is there, attachment is there. Pile up. Whatever conditioned.
Yeah. It can be a condition for the development of understanding.
Anytime. Understanding what will the coming ones.
So if anytime, then what's the need to go to India?
I
have
described the other day as the pain respect.
But you can pay respect any time too.
Of course you can.
It's just movement, arising, changing moment. So there's a decision to go to India or not to go to India. You have to go back to me and I go to Nakarpana. It doesn't matter.
But movement, you don't need to go to India for there to be movement.
No, that's exactly the point. That there is, the question is wrong. Really.
So what's the yonisomanasikara behind that decision of going to
India?
It is considered good to go to the holy places. But I think it's in the Buddha.
It's just by conditions.
I think it's the same as your question about coming here.
Different moments.
It may be mixed. There may be some Kosovo. Theoretically,
if you'd like to go somewhere, where would you like to go?
I would like to go to a place where I can study every time.
So where's that place? Anywhere.
When they go to India, they have a lot of talks in both Thai and English.
Yeah,
a lot.
That's what I'd say. It could be colonial teacher in India.
But I think this afternoon they're studying Abhidhamma.
If you think of the topics that we've covered.
Yeah, but she asked me, where do I want to go?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I know. But
as much as we could say, it's by conditions.
Yes. There's a great deal of dhamma on the India trips.
Oh, but you can somehow, it could be unwholesome conditions.
I think that, like with any activity, there are so many different conditions, so many different factors, and to each person it would be quite different.
But you're right, there could be a wrong view involved.
Yes.
Ignorance, attachment. Depending on one's level of understanding.
And if one goes thinking, oh, then one will have more understanding. Like if one comes here thinking, oh, then I will have right understanding, then it's just more attachment and wrong view too. Just like if one thinks, oh, if only I'd been born in the time of the Buddha, then I would, conditions are so complicated.
Oh, I need to go to India in order to develop.
But you probably still would have more understanding.
Sorry?
Because you hear Dharma.
Sometimes they go to China, to Japan, to other places, and now it's India, exactly
just
the same.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, but you can decide, I don't go where I go. Why do you have
but there are conditions.
Yeah, but that's what my question is. What are the conditions that are making you to go to India for this?
Would like to visit the place where Buddha lived, taught, and many arahatas in the old days. Yeah.
There's also memories of previous trips and what understanding arose during previous trips to India. I know for me, India is always an exercise in patience.
And she goes to test our patience.
Parami.
And for me, I go because it helps me to learn my patience, each time. But it helps to learn my patience, for me. That's for somebody else, it might be something else.
So is that right, motivation?
It's developing parami.
There's also
then I should go to India to develop
a system.
I always found the trips to India very valuable for different reasons, and I've always come away from those trips to India. I'm not going this time, I haven't gone for a few years, but each time I've gone I've found something very valuable in them. But that's right. I don't go there for that. I go there because the trip is on and there's a lot of Dhamma spoken and a lot can be learned. And it just happens that from each trip I've gained something from it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Remember we were talking...
So it's about gaining.
No, it's not about gaining. You go on the trip. It's there, it's being held, and you go on it. And you have an opportunity to listen to Dhamma. You have an opportunity to listen to Dhamma. For a lot of Dhamma.
Gaining is like a side effect.
And gaining
it happens or it doesn't happen.
The understanding that there is no self. Gaining the understanding that there's no self.
Some of us go because we've got Ajahn captured for that period of time. We just overdreamed and we never see it for a whole length of time.
Remember we were talking about the company of good friends and the opportunities to be reminded about seeing things maybe differently to the way they're seen if we're not in the company of good friends. So it's opportunities that may not come to fruition, but they're there. Yeah, so I think...
I just moved to Thailand this week, actually. I'm here for a few years. And when I told Sukhinder...
You've been here for a few years?
I'm going to be here for a few years. Yeah. And when I told Sukhinder that I was coming, he said, why are you coming? I said, because this is a good place to learn Dhamma, right? And he said, that's wrong view. Right? Remember that? When we were having coffee? You said that's wrong view.
I said
it's
I think it's valuable.
It sounds like something you would say.
All that stuff, 130 people being moved around, you know, God of dope. So, you know, I go scuba diving, you know? I have lots of conditions for
scuba diving.
For understanding underwater, you know, I think. When there's no
and I think that it's good because I think that we can help one another to understand Dharma better because we have more time. Here we just come and go home each day, no work with friends at all. But then we'll know. We can talk about anything in one's life, like the development of parami, the minding.
The same hotel.
Yeah. No, you're captured by the Nirvana Hotel.
Yeah, it sounds like a wonderful opportunity.
It is.
It's good.
It's good. Whether you decide to go or not to go, your decision is going to be based on this. Reasons.
Yeah,
but
there's also fun.
So there's no actual right decision.
Because you like Indian food?
Yeah, it's all a matter of conditions. Sometimes, for instance, Ivan says you can't go because he's got some kind of work, whatever it is. So there's always, conditions that make it, will allow this to happen or that to happen. It's always everything. It's always a reminder of. It's not a you making a decision. It's conditions that bring such a decision to fruition.
Yeah, but I think it's important which conditions you are favoring.
Who is doing
which
the
conditions you are favoring?
Because you do value Dharma, right? And you do know that if you go to a particular place, the chances of hearing Dharma is there. So you make the effort to go there. Whether or not understanding arises, that's another question. But, you know, we have to live conventionally. That's why Acharya asked you. If you didn't come here, where would you go?
You need to live conventionally?
I mean, we do.
Have to. What do you mean by
that? I mean, we're talking to each other, communicating. There's no necessary understanding of Dharma and rupas arising. But
you said live conventionally?
Yeah, we live in the conventional world.
Where will we be living unconventionally?
You're taking the meaning of conventional in terms of like...
No, in the meaning that you're talking about. But what would be... I mean, is there living unconventionally? I don't think...
He's just contrasting... talking about Dhammas versus conventional speech.
So
conventional language, we're not talking about Paramattha Dhammas.
The world of things. So
when you
the conventional world is the world of people and things.
People and things.
And we know that in absolute terms, the world is the six worlds of the different doorways.
No, I don't know.
Maybe the non-conventional is when you understand there's no self.
Just one very quick question. It just reminded me of someone on ESG. They were discussing the meaning of Paramatta. So we talk about the conventional world and the world of absolute realities, Paramatta Dharmas. And Parama meaning highest, and the utter Paramatta, highest realities, Dharmas. What do you understand that utter to actually mean?
No one can change the quality of each reality. So that's meaning of Paramatta.
Hardness, whenever it arises, is always hardness.
No.
It's not something else. Yeah, its characteristics does not alter through time.
karmas well, will always have the characteristic of karma.
Well, exactly. It can never be changed or broken down. So in that sense, we can't split up parama and atta. It's just the one meaning, that which cannot be altered.
When we talk about Dhamma, we talk about realities. And when we talk about Paramada Dhamma, we understand better what reality is. No one can change its characteristic at all. Hardness is hardness. Pleasant feeling is pleasant feeling. And that is Paramada of Dhamma.
So anyway, what were you saying about living conventionally and going to India?
Now.
Huh?
Always now. Living in conventional world until Panya arises. So usually one lives in conventional world of things, people, the whole big world. But when it comes to understand reality as a very tiny, very fragile, just arise and falls away, each one not permanent, then we understand the world is that which arises and falls away. And what we take for a permanent thing is conventional meaning of what we take for the whole combination of all realities.
What we take for the conventional
is just thinking. Mm-hmm. So it's conventional truth and
absolute truth. We could say conceptual truth.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. No one can change the characteristic of Dharma, that is paramatta of Dharma. How do we get no one can change the characteristic of from paramatta? How does the word come to mean that?
You mean paramatta?
Paramatta.
Okay. What is the meaning of parama?
Highest.
Yeah. It's so high that no one can change.
I see.
And no one can reach. Yeah. Absolute.
Absolute.
And atta?
Atta is the meaning.
There's a meaning that is so meaning high that cannot be
which
changed.
Represents the characteristic. If there is no characteristic, no word, no to use.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
after 4. Thank you very much.
That's all.